Welcome back. Welcome to Module 5. So in this module, Module 5, we're going to talk about flirtation and seduction, where we're going to talk about ways to use hypnotic techniques to be flirtatious and to make that work to your advantage. Now, did you do your homework? Did you have fun with it? I hope you did. I hope you did some mirroring, and I hope you did some pacing. By the way, concerning pacing, one way to find out the way that somebody talks is to just ask open-ended questions, questions that they can elaborate on, questions that the answer can go on, and you can find out how they're talking. Because let's face it, you've got to get them talking before you can find out how they talk. And then, of course, you can slowly change the way that you talk to pace what they're saying. So let's take this a step further. Let's build on what you've already learned, and let's talk about flirting. I'm Steve G. Jones, clinical hypnotherapist, your tour guide, your mentor, your informant, your friend, your confidant, as you learn how to use hypnosis to get what you want in a dating situation, how to use hypnotic pickup methods. Okay, so we left off talking about pacing. I want to talk about future pacing now. What is future pacing? Well, in future pacing, you take your date to a time in the future, perhaps a future date. You take your date to a date at a future date. And the way you do that is you get them talking about the future date. So, for example, if I want to future pace my date, I would have my date talk about a date that will happen in the future. I might say, "What's your ideal date? What does your ideal date consist of?" And then I would get some information about that ideal date. Where they want to go, what they want to do. And I could say, okay, can you add some detail to that? Can you elaborate on the picture? What would it smell like? What would it feel like? Just like I did with you with installing an anchor. Remember, I had you remember what it felt like. In the last module, I had you remember what it smelled like and so forth. Well, you're having them imagine what it's going to feel like and taste like and smell like and so forth in the future. What are you doing? You're creating the future for them. You're creating it for them. And as they're talking, you need to make sure that you put yourself in that picture. So as they're describing their perfect date in the future, just say something here and there, such as, well, what would I be wearing? Or you can say, well, I'd probably be sitting there smiling as we were watching that movie in Paris near the Eiffel Tower or whatever the perfect date was. You see, what you're doing is you're putting yourself in their life in the future. So they've anchored themselves to you being in the future. The future now equals this date, and this date also equals you. You are in their heads in the future at this date, so they're going to move toward it. They are now thinking of a future with you. When you think about it, the past doesn't exist, and the future doesn't exist. These are concepts. We have memories of the past, but are those memories the past? No, the past is gone. We have thoughts about the future, but are those thoughts the future? No. Those are all thoughts. In both cases, those are thoughts. Thoughts don't equal the past or the future. Where are thoughts? They're in the present. Once you realize that everything in your life is happening right now, everything happens in the present, you gain a little bit of understanding and enlightenment and power. You create this so-called future by what you do in the present. You plant seeds in their minds. You plant seeds in their mind in the present. Seeds that are in what you might consider to be the future, but they're happening right now, and then they're going to gravitate toward that happening. That ideal date that happened with you is now in their heads, so they're programmed, they're hypnotically programmed to move toward that, to make that happen. So suddenly, them not being with you in the future is not an option, because they've seen the future. Even though the future doesn't exist, they've seen something in their minds, and they're going to move toward that picture to create it. Now, be careful when using this powerful technique, because if this is a person that you don't want to have the second date with or third date or a future with, then why would you create the future with them in their minds? It's going to be really difficult for them to get it out of their heads. You may remember during some breakups, the person saying, well, I thought we would have a future together. Or maybe you were that person. You said, I thought we would have a future together. And you had the future in your head, or they had the future in their head. What did they really have in their head? What did you really have in your head? Just some thoughts. In the present, you had some thoughts. That's all you had. You th- you created those thoughts, or through things that they said, you created those thoughts, through indicators that maybe they wanted a future with you, or maybe you wanted a future with them. That's programming. That's hypnotic programming. That's called future pacing. It's probably happened to you. You've probably done it to other people. Now you can do it with a purpose, but be careful. It's a very powerful tool. Don't future pace anyone that you don't want to have a future with. Let's talk again about body language. And this is important to talk about now when you're doing these techniques, because you want to make sure that their body language is appropriate. You want to make sure that they're responding to what you're doing and that you're not inadvertently, without meaning to or without realizing that you're doing it, turning them off. So, are they making eye contact with you at least half the time that you're talking and they're talking? Are their arms uncrossed? Are they facing you? These are all good things that you should look for. Are they smiling? Are their feet facing toward you? Are their toes pointing toward you? If their toes are pointing toward the door, or their body is facing toward the door, they might want to leave. And if you see some of these negative body language patterns developing, well, what you want to do is change what you're doing. You want to change it up so that you can have them facing you and their arms open and they're showing their palms, and they're smiling and nodding and everything is good. See, you'll know how well you're doing by their body language, and you need to realize it's a dance, it's a fluid dance. These things are fluid because people are organic beings. I'll say it over and over. People are not stones. They're not computer programs. They're not computers. They are people, and people can change, and it can be a moment-to-moment change. Assess how you're doing by their body language. Look for positive body language and make changes where necessary. If you're noticing negative body language, toes pointing toward the door, body facing toward the door, arms crossed, legs crossed, not nodding, not looking at you, not even seeming to be on the same page as you at all, well, you need to reassess. And one of the things you can do is step up the rapport building, step up the mirroring, step up the pacing, step everything up. During conversation, you want to find similarities, find common ground. That's going to help establish rapport. It will also help the other person be at ease while you're flirting with them. Make sure they're at ease. And remember, the more similarities you find and bring out, we both like this, we both like that, the more you will get them to open up. Now, don't overdo this. Don't say, oh, you like that, I like that too. Oh, you like that, I like that too. Oh, really, you like that? Funny you should mention that, I like that too. That's not going to even seem genuine. Even if you do like everything they like, don't keep mentioning it all the time. Don't mention that everything they like, you like. If there are so many things that they like that you like, then just start saying some things you like and let them say, oh yeah, I like that too, I like that too. And as you're flirting, you're continuing to use compliments, but you're using them sparingly. You're not complimenting everything. And remember, as you learned before, you're complimenting them, not their possessions, but them. Tie it into them. Let's talk about pattern interrupts. This is a technique, a neurolinguistic programming technique that you can use in dating, and I want you to get comfortable with it. So let's talk about it. Pattern interrupts. What is a pattern interrupt? It is a technique you're going to use to veer the other person's conversation off track and then channel it into something else that you want to talk about. That's one use of a pattern interrupt. A pattern interrupt is also something that can be used to put someone into a hypnotic state. Isn't that interesting? You can put someone into a hypnotic state with a pattern interrupt. It puts you in control of the conversation. So one use of pattern interrupts is if the woman is talking on and on about something that you don't want to hear about. Maybe she's just nervous. Maybe that's why she's talking a lot about a topic. And you want to change the conversation. Pattern interrupt simply means that you are interrupting her pattern by saying something like, wow, did you hear that noise? Or, oh my goodness, what time is it? Or, hey, is that Joe? It's something that diverts her attention. You momentarily divert her attention. She's lost track of what she was talking about then, and then you redirect the subject to be whatever you want it to be. She's going to have a few moments there where she's looking for something to talk about. And if you then say, oh, by the way, what do you think about the weather? Or anything else you want to interject. Okay, so now how can we use pattern interrupts to put someone into a hypnotic state? very interesting technique. And this is used by street hypnotists a lot, people who go out in the street and just hypnotize people. You have to be careful with this technique because it gives you a lot of power. All you have to do to use a pattern interrupt to put someone into a hypnotic state is the same thing that you did with interrupting their conversation. Hey, is that Joe? Or, oh, would you look at the time? Or what was that sound? And then you give them a suggestion. Okay, so it's going to sound very simple to you until you do it and it works. Not everyone's that suggestible, so it's not foolproof. If you have a big bag of tricks or a big box of tools, you can use a lot of tricks or a lot of tools here and there, and if you use enough of them, you're going to get what you want. So keep in mind, this technique doesn't always work with everyone. Not everyone is this suggestible, but a lot of people are. So here's the way the technique works. You're talking with someone, and you're letting them talk. Let them really get on a train of thought, and let them dominate the conversation for a little while. Whatever they're talking about, let them run with it. And then you introduce a distraction. Hey, is that Joe? Or, wow, look what time it is. Or, what was that sound? Or, what was that? You have to say it in kind of an alarming way, so you really jolt them out of the conversation. If you say it and they keep on talking, you haven't done it right. You need to make sure that you really interject it. Hey, what was that? Okay, make it kind of a startling thing. It shocks them a little bit, takes them out of their conversation. And then you can give them a hypnotic suggestion in that maybe couple seconds there where their mind is kind of reeling. You see, they're so into what they're talking about that once you threw them off, their mind didn't know where to go. And just like you changed the conversation, you can also give them a suggestion. And just like you change the conversation, you can instead give them a suggestion. Let's go outside. Let's go here. Let's go there. Let's go wherever you want them to go. Their mind is very open and suggestible in that moment. So give them a suggestion. So what a beautiful technique. They're talking and talking and talking. It might even be annoying to you because you've let them dominate the conversation. You startle them, hey, what was that sound? And then you say, let's go outside. What are they going to do? In most cases, they're going to go outside. Won't work with everyone, but this technique gives you an advantage. It gets you in touch with their subconscious mind. Their conscious filter is gone. They're reeling. They're looking for something to grab onto. They want some direction. They've lost the conversation. They don't know what they're doing for maybe a split second up to a couple seconds. So then tell them what they're doing. They'll be thankful. Okay, let's go outside. Okay, so that's how a pattern interrupt works. And you can continue to use them throughout the evening or the day. You can continue to interrupt their pattern and tell them what to do. Okay, what about representational systems? Representational systems give you a great advantage when you're flirting with someone. The main representational systems are visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. Visual people use words like see and look and notice. They use words that relate to seeing things. Auditory people use words such as hear and listen. They use words that relate to hearing things. Kinesthetic people use words such as feel and touch. Kinesthetic people relate both emotionally and physically, kinesthetic people. So once you establish which representational system they use most often in their conversation, you can use the representational system to flirt with them. This establishes rapport even further and allows you to control them. How do you find out the representational system? Well, if they're talking, just listen. Listen if they use visual words or auditory words or kinesthetic words. If they're not, again, ask your open-ended questions. Get them talking. How do you feel about Mississippi? How do you feel about life on other planets? How do you feel about methane being discovered on Mars? How do you feel about something? And get them talking about something and listen to the words they're using. Once you have their representational system down, the major modality, as we call it in NLP, meaning are they primarily talking with visual words or auditory words or kinesthetic words, then you can really work with them. Then you can go to work by using those same types of words, by using words that relate to their major modality, their major representational system. Suddenly you're talking more of their language. They're definitely more into you at that point, and you're more able to flirt with them more efficiently because you're talking their language. So as we now segue into seduction, we've used flirtation, now we're segueing into seduction. What's important in seduction? Well, being assertive is very important in seduction. Keep in mind, being assertive is somewhere between being passive and being aggressive, okay? But it's more on the aggressive side. If there were a spectrum or a meter that ran from passive to aggressive, maybe passive is 1 and aggressive is a 10, then you would be somewhere around an 8 if you wanted to be assertive. You're not being aggressive. You're not grabbing the person and forcing them to do something, but you're not just sitting there and letting life happen either. You're taking charge, but not in an aggressive way, meaning you don't have to use force, but in an assertive way, meaning you are calm and confident, but very direct at times. So be direct, remain calm, continue to be polite, and use words such as can and will. Okay, these are positive programming words. Can and will. Avoid negative words and focus on these positive words. And if assertiveness isn't your strong suit, anchor it. Anchor assertiveness. Create an anchor for it. And fire it off when you need it. Because you must be assertive to master seduction and or persuasion. Whether you're just trying to get someone to do what you want them to do or you're trying to actually seduce them, you need to be assertive. Okay, now I'm going to teach you a technique which is going to help you a lot, and it's going to build on what you already know. I want you to get into the habit of making several small requests that you know they will answer yes to. Now, salespeople use this all the time. It can be a thought, an idea, or an action. You know, do you think that the sky is blue? Yes. Do you feel that people live an average of approximately 80 years? Yes. Would you like to sit down now? Yes. So you've gotten your three yeses. You've gotten them to say yes three times. You've made several small requests. You've asked them to agree with you on an idea or a thought or to take some sort of simple action that you know they would take anyway. And you know these thoughts, they would agree on them anyway because everyone agrees on the things that you've said. Other examples would be, do you like to have fun? Hopefully that's yes. If not, maybe throw your hand. You're with a person who doesn't like to have fun. Okay, so hopefully they said yes. Do you like to have fun? Yes. Do you like to have, and think of something you already know they like, coffee, food, or wine, whatever it may be. Yes. Do you enjoy a good conversation? Yes. Then the big request comes. Would you like to go out for coffee with me? Okay, they've already gotten in the habit of saying yes. So the next yes, even though it's a big request, is easy for them and natural, and of course it's yes. Would you like to go to a wine tasting with me? Okay, it's simple if you follow what you said with something logical. For example, if you ask, do you like coffee? Then you say, would you like to go out for coffee with me? Do you like wine? Would you like to go to a wine tasting with me? The small yes requests set them up to say yes for the big request. And when I say big request, I want you to not think of it as a large, daunting request that's really difficult to get, because it's not. It's just something that requires them to do something that you actually want them to do. That's the only reason I'm using the word big there, but don't think of it as daunting. Think of it as easy, actually. It's just the goal. It's big because it's the goal, but it's easy, and you're going to get them to say yes to that because you've already prepared them. Let's talk about voice inflection. Voice inflection is important because the tone of your voice often speaks louder than the actual words. Now, voice inflection is the pitch of your voice when ending a sentence. What inflection do you give to the end of the sentence? Now, in giving a command, your voice inflection should go down. You will do this now. You see that? My voice inflection went down because I gave a command. Okay? Doesn't have to be that pronounced, but I wanted to make it clear to you. When asking a question, your voice inflection should go up. What do you think about clouds? What do you think about the moon? What do you think about the sky? Okay, you might not ask those questions because those are silly questions, but you see what I mean. Your voice inflection goes up when you're asking a question. It's important to understand the difference between a question and a command. When you're giving a command, you shouldn't raise your voice at the end. Would you like to go to the dance? Not powerful. Not good. Let that go. Would you like to go out for coffee? No. First of all, it's always better to give a command rather than, would you like to do this? Would you like to do that? You should say, let's do this or let's do that. But if you're beginning dating, then I will allow you to say, would you like to do this? And then my previous example, I used would anyway. So you can say would, but eventually I want you to segue into let's do this. But when you say it, let's go to the dance. Let's go out for a walk. Okay? Not that pronounced, but you get the idea. So if you're asking in the question, would you like to whatever, would you like to go to the dance? Would you like to go out for a walk? You see the power in that? It sort of has an authoritarian sound to it, doesn't it? When you say that, it almost sounds like royalty. Would you like to go to the dance? Okay, so as you're using this communication to get what you want, realize that successful communication at the seduction level means that you have already initiated contact and flirted, and your communication is continuing to evolve during the first date, second date, and beyond, and you're continuing to listen to what they're saying and use their words and their interest to continue to establish a deeper level of rapport and what people call chemistry. What people call chemistry is just something they imagine in their minds. It can be created by the words you use, and the words you use are hopefully based on what they are saying and not just your own words that you're throwing out there without paying attention. Listen to what they're saying. Create the chemistry by talking their language. What about embedded commands? You can use embedded commands when talking, emailing, or texting. Now, what's an embedded command? That sounds interesting, doesn't it? It's embedded in the conversation. An embedded command, otherwise known as analog marking, by the way, A-N-A-L-O-G, if you're in America, A-N-A-L-O-G-U-E, if you're in the UK and other places. Analog marking, it just means bringing out certain parts of the conversation, bringing them out. And you do that by having a three-word command in mind. So, for example, if you want someone to scratch their nose, you can embed it in a command. And you can do this over texts, over emails, over written words, over just talking in person or talking on the phone. All you have to do is make the words of the command a little different than the other words and hide them in the sentence or paragraph. For example, if I want you to scratch your head, I can say a sentence where I'm marking out. So if I want you to scratch your head, what I can say is the sentence, I was walking down the street the other day and I saw a scratch on a car and I thought maybe it's your car, and then I decided to head back home and tell you about it. Okay, so what have I done? I've said a sentence or a paragraph and I have said the word scratch your head a little more loudly than the rest of the words. I brought them out. What happens in the subconscious mind when that happens? Those words are strung together. Scratch your head are then strung together in the subconscious mind as one sentence. So again, I was walking down the street the other day and I saw a scratch on a car and I wondered if it was your car, and then I decided to head home to tell you. So you can do that in texting by texting the sentence and making the first word of the first letter of each command word a capital. So the S in scratch, the Y in your, the H in head would all be capitalized. These words then stand together as a sentence. Think of it like a field with a bunch of trees and bushes, but three of the trees are taller than the other trees, and they're exactly the same height as each other. So you've got three tall trees that stand out above all the other trees and bushes, and they happen to be the exact same height. Even if they're not together, they're seen as a unit. Those are the tall trees. It's just like if you have the unfortunate experience of showing up to a party wearing the same green shirt as two other people. Well, suddenly they think you're on the same soccer team or something because you're wearing the exact same green shirt. Your subconscious mind will put things in categories, and if it sees or hears words that are similar yet different from the other words, it will link those words together. Those words form some kind of unit. They belong together. So your mind creates a sentence. How else can you use this? Well, if you're sending an email, you can make the font slightly different of those three words. You can make it a different color. You can make it slightly larger or smaller. those three words need to be different. Or you can italicize those three words. Be careful not to get carried away. Don't make all the words really small and these three words large. Otherwise, you're giving yourself away and it's not covert anymore. It's not what we call covert hypnosis anymore. It'd be overt hypnosis and you're going to get caught. So hide the words, and I think you'll find that you can have some fun with that. So embedded commands can be used in conversation or in emails or in texts or any other way you can find to use them. Now, if you're using them in conversation one-on-one with someone, you don't have to say the words more loudly if you don't want to. You can do something different while you're saying those words. So I can say, I was walking down the street and I saw a scratch, and while I'm saying the word scratch, I am perhaps touching my left arm with my right hand. And I'm done saying the word scratch, so I'm no longer touching my left arm. I saw a scratch touching left arm on a car, and I wondered if it was your car. While I'm saying the word your, again, I'm touching my left arm. I'm only touching my left arm during those words that I'm marking out. And then I decided to head home to tell you about it. And while I'm saying the word head, I'm touching my arm. Again, I've said an entire sentence or paragraph, and I've only done something different while I'm saying those words. When I'm not saying those words, I'm not doing that different thing. When I am saying those words, I am doing that different thing. In the subconscious mind of the listener, there's something different about those words. They belong together. I'm touching my arm only while I'm saying those words. Those words must somehow be different than the other words, kind of like the three tall trees or the three people who wore the green shirt at the party. They belong together. This is not something that you consciously pick up on. It's something that you subconsciously pick up on. You just kind of log it in. Oh, that's a team of some sort, three green shirts. Oh, those trees belong together because they're the same height. Oh, those words belong together because there's something different that happens during them. Consciously, you're not actually aware of it. You're not thinking these things because you don't have to. Your subconscious mind takes care of it and creates this sentence. So the person who's listening is going to then have a command. It becomes a command. Scratch your head. What do? They scratch their head. As you can imagine, in the dating world, there are a lot of three-word commands that you can come up with. So if you want that lady to go back to your place and you're at a party, you can have your three-word command, which is hidden in a sentence or paragraph that makes sense in the context of what you're talking about. Your three-word command would be, leave with me, and you hide it in a sentence. Let's talk about emotional anchoring. Emotional anchoring. You want to raise your date's emotions to a strong and positive state. And how do you do that? You get them talking about something that they're passionate about, something that they feel good about, something that raises their state. Now, if you're already out in a club and everything is wonderful, maybe their emotional state is already raised. It's already elevated. But you can get them to do that by talking about something positive that they feel passionate about. And then what you want to do when you know they're in that state is use an anchoring action. For example, touching your solar plexus or playing with your necklace. Whatever excuse you can find to touch within a 1 foot radius of your solar plexus, meaning from your chin down to your belly button and from your left armpit to your right armpit and everywhere in between, anywhere in there is fair game. You want to touch that area while they're in that emotional state. Now, what does that do? That creates an association between that peak state that they're feeling, that good peak state, and you. What you've said to their subconscious mind is there is a relationship between how good you feel right now and me. So get them in a peak state, or if you find them in a peak state already feeling good emotionally, go ahead and touch somewhere in that 1 foot radius zone, 1 foot radius from your solar plexus. And you're going to create an association in their mind, an anchor between you and a good time. All right, let's look at leading, the technique of leading. Now, if you've been mirroring the person, you've already mastered the art of mirroring, and you've been pacing them, well, now it's time to lead them. What does that mean? That means you're not following them anymore. You're getting them to follow you. You're leading them. So you start doing things and see if they do it. Start scratching your head with your left hand and see if they scratch their head with their right hand. See if they're following your lead. See if they're doing what you're doing. Stand in a certain way and see if they stand in a certain way. See if they're following your lead. If they are, then you can start making suggestions and they will follow your lead. Let's go outside. Let's go to my place. Whatever you want them to do, once you see that you're leading and they're following, you can make suggestions and you can take direct control of the situation. It happens that easily because you've already done the groundwork. You've already mirrored them and you've already paced them. So here are the steps. After you've done your mirroring and pacing, start with simple things such as hand gestures or postures or facial expressions. Do something and see if they do it. Then take it to the next level by asking or suggesting something that you should do. And make it something that you consider to be simple, something that's not amazing for them to agree to. And then if they agree to that, take it to the next level. Okay, let's do this, something you really want them to do that you didn't really think that they would do unless you had them under your control. Because guess what? You already do. You've already proven it to yourself. You've already got the evidence. So now it's time to really go for what you want. Here's another technique. It's called the commitment technique. You're getting the person to commit to something, a date, a monogamous relationship, whatever you want. Okay, so what you're going to do is create a situation in the future, meaning in their mind, they're imagining the future, create a situation in the future where this commitment might be challenged somehow or something might come up. So let's say, for example, that you're just trying to get someone to be monogamous with you, and you're talking about the future where this might be challenged. Maybe they're thinking about cheating in the future. Just have them imagine that, that they're thinking about that in the future. And then ask them, what would cause them in that moment to keep their commitment to you? What would cause them to keep their commitment to you? So use this technique if you suspect that that commitment might be a challenge in the future. If you're with someone and you think that in the future they might cheat, go ahead and create that possibility in their mind in the future by having them just imagine it right now. Time when, not them actually cheating, but when that might be a challenge where they might have to deal with that. Create that in their mind and then ask them, what would cause them to keep their commitment to you? What would happen that would cause them to keep their commitment to you? Or we could make it something very simple. Maybe you're just trying to get a date with them. Let's take it back a few steps. Maybe you're just trying to get a date with them. Have them imagine in their mind something that would cause them to not want to have the date. Don't do this if you think that there's not going to be a problem, because you don't want to create a problem by having them imagine a problem. If you think there's going to be a problem, go ahead and solve it for them ahead of time by having them imagine that problem coming up. You're trying to set up a date with them, you don't think it's really going to happen. So you have them create that in the future. Well, what if, can you imagine tomorrow comes along and you're thinking, wow, should I really go out with this person? What would make you go ahead and decide yes? And then they will tell you, well, what would make me decide yes would be that you're a wonderful person, that you're an amazing person, that I really want to go on a date with you, that I really want to be with you. You're going to have them come up with the reasons. That way, when they get to that point in the future and that becomes a challenge for them, they've already worked through it. They're already programmed. They're already programmed with the commitment technique, which, by the way, is a form of future pacing, but a very specific form. Again, only use the commitment technique if you think commitment of some sort is going to be a challenge. Don't use it otherwise, because you might, without realizing it, create a challenge that didn't already exist. Use it when you need to, but realize it works. Okay, so I know you've enjoyed this module on the flirtation and seduction, because what could be more fun than flirtation and seduction? Module 5, flirtation and seduction, is going to be your ticket to having a lot of fun in the future. Can you imagine yourself in the future having fun with flirtation and seduction? You need to start doing that. You need to start creating your future to be fun and exciting and successful. So start imagining a future in which you are successful with flirtation and seduction. So for your homework, I want you to practice what we've talked about. I want you to practice finding out their representational system and using it. Remember, visual, auditory, or kinesthetic. I want you to practice being assertive. I want you to practice verbal pacing and getting them to say yes. Remember the three small requests, and then the quote, and then the big request, the one that you really want them to do. I want you to practice your voice inflection. Remember, when you give a command, your voice goes down. That's right, it's now time to do your homework. And you're going to do your homework, okay? So enjoy that. And remember, when you ask a question, it goes up. Do you want to do this? Okay, and it doesn't have to be quite that pronounced, but it should go up when you ask a question and down when you give a command. I want you to practice your embedded commands, the commands that you give that are embedded, that are hidden. Three-word commands. Whatever you want them to do, you need to boil it down to a three-word command and then give it to them in a sentence or paragraph. Give them that command in a hidden way. I want you to practice emotional anchoring, getting them to that peak state and then anchoring that to you. That emotion, that positive emotion is anchored to you because you've touched your solar plexus and you've let them see you touch it while they're in that peak state feeling good about themselves. I want you to practice leading them. Once you've established mirroring and pacing, well, that's great. You've established rapport. Let's do something with it now. Get them to do what you're doing and then take it to the next level. You're leading them in simple gestures. You're suggesting something and then you're getting them to do what you really want them to do. And I want you to practice the commitment technique if you need it, getting them to envision a future in which that commitment challenge comes up and they're working through it. So by the time they get to that point in the future, they've already worked through it. Remember, only use the commitment technique if you think commitment is going to be a challenge. Okay, so do your homework and then join me in the next module, Module 6, the final module, where you're going to learn even more techniques. I'm Steve G. Jones, clinical hypnotherapist, hoping you have an outstanding day.